Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Today's episode is brought to you by Ahrefs, an online toolset for SEOs and content marketers, and here's why you should give them a try. With Ahrefs, you can do keyword research and use their keyword difficulty score to find the easiest keywords to rank for in Google. Ahrefs has the biggest database of live backlinks, so you can plug a website of a competitor and find every website that is linking to them. Ahrefs will also show you all the keywords that your competitor's site is ranking for in Google and exactly how much traffic it brings them. In other words, if you want to get more traffic to your website, Ahrefs has all the tools you need. Just sign up via our absolutely special URL right now. hte.io, that's hte.io/SEO. And you'll get a 14-day free trial of Ahrefs, plus, as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you can get 30% off your first 6 months if you decide to stay. Hurry up, that special URL will only be available until August 1st. hte.io/SEO, and get your 14-day free trial right now.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. It's so very cool of you to join me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a leader, speaker, Marxist capitalist, and a smart entrepreneur. During the past 20 years, he has bootstrapped a printing company called Webmart, dealt with the rise of the internet in his market, and thrived based on his principles. He firmly believes traditional business is broken and too focused on the exploitation of workers, customers, and partners. So he has built Webmart to be focused on the happiness of his team. He calls his approach Marxist capitalism and is a direct way of using profits to go directly into the people on the team. My guest believes that if you keep the people around you happy, they will do great work. Now, let's hack. Simon Biltcliffe. Before we get rolling here, I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Braintree. I know you remember the first dollar you made in business. It's a hard thing to forget. It's one of the greatest parts of being an entrepreneur. And now you want to grow until your business makes your millionth or billionth dollar. But have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? Braintree lets you accept every way to pay, from PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one simple integration. And it doesn't matter what currency your customers use, because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them. To learn more about how you and your company can grow with Braintree, visit BraintreePayments.com/hack. That's BraintreePayments.com/hack. We're back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest, all the way from England. Simon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right. Let's jump into it, Simon. Simon, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Probably just saying thank you for showing appreciation, genuine appreciation, just every touch point that you possibly can with every relationship, both supply side and client side, as well as obviously with your fellow webmarketers. You show appreciation, because that's I think that's the thing that everybody, with the exception of probably myself, really appreciates being appreciated, and that goes a long way to driving the kind of culture of the business.
Yeah, and so this is, I'm assuming this is something that also affects the rest of your life, just like outside of your business.
Yeah, well, wherever you go, I think you can make a positive impact on everybody by smiling and helping as many people as you possibly can as you go through life, and if you run a business, you're in one of the rarefied kind of positions in society where you can help more people than most. And if you always take a little bit of time, and time's precious, and I appreciate that, but if you take a little bit of time to help people when they need it, or just give them an opportunity to feel appreciated or noticed, then it pays back many folds later in life. Don't know how, don't know when, don't know where, but it always does. And people notice it. I mean, we've just had one of the printers that we deal with. Unfortunately, you know, they've gone bust, and I'm getting lots of CVs in. So we're just sending a tub of sweets out to everybody who sends a CV, and even though we can't obviously take everybody on. But they, you know, when people are particularly low, if you can just make a little gesture that makes them feel appreciated, then that goes an awfully long way. And I found that it's really the little things, the little or zero cost or very modest cost things that are appreciated most, the little gestures that people really, I suppose, turns you from another vendor or another client or another supplier, whatever, whichever way you are, to somebody who cares about them and takes time out to go that little mile extra.
Yeah, I think it is the small things. And so you started Webmart UK now, I think 1996, 1997.
Yeah, 20 years ago, just over 20 years ago.
Yeah, which, I mean, in internet years, obviously, is like, well, the internet as we know it didn't even exist at that point, really.
Absolutely not.
So do you think that maybe like competitors or new companies that would come into the space now, because it's almost like we lose touch with our customer directly because we can work all through email, we can work through websites, we can work through payments, all done without us actually having to deal with our customer. Do you think that because of the years you've spent in it and in the offline space of it, that to move it sort of online as well allows you to really want to keep that human touch and that really being nice and saying thank you?
I think it's essential. We developed the world's first instant online estimator for our type of print. I mean, so we've been an early adopter. We've had, you know, software of our own for 18 years now. So we were quite an early adopter of that technology. But basically, that's a way of enabling you to spend time still talking and seeing customers, because we use that as a back office function that automates all of the boring stuff that you need to do, giving you time to spend as much time as you possibly can with customers and talking to them over the phone or sending them voice notes or sending them small video clips of what you're doing and all of those kind of things. Because I look at it as a kind of Terminator business model, if you're old enough to remember the Arnie films. You know, you've got this amazing machine with a very thin skin of humanity on the top of it, which makes it acceptable, which makes it exceptional, which makes it, you know, something that people want to be involved with. And so we've, you know, as a business, we've got turnover going around about £750,000 per person, which is about $1 million a person. And all of those people have high contact time with our customers, and we have great long-term relationships with our customers, because most certainly in the B2B space, your customers can be with you for an awfully long time. These are not just transactional entities. These are people who you develop long-term partnerships with. And as 70% of the global GDP is in B2B trading, that's quite a lot. And so in our world, I want to enable the humanity, the human interaction, as much as we possibly can. You're right, though. It's a constant struggle because it's so easy to email. You know, it's so easy to do all of those things which don't involve the human contact. But, you know, we've made our office space as exceptional as we can, so customers want to come to see us and suppliers want to see us, and they come to us as much as we go to them. So it's because it's an unusual place with all sorts of different types of print, and it looks different, it feels different. And so I think if you can make it so that people want to engage, they will, because I think most people actually appreciate that that human side of it. We all live in communities, and we don't all live on our own on mountainsides, because we like being with people. And just because you're in the work kind of mode, you don't stop that. I think most people would like to spend as much time with people that they like as they possibly can. And, you know, we've got a great bunch of people, and we really do know our thing, which helps to be printing, as well as anybody in the world. And so we can really help customers who are wanting to use print keep their customers loyal to them by the more we understand about them, the more we can help them. And that's obviously takes a lot of human interaction.
It does, yeah. I love it. I love it. So 20 years in this business. So I want to go back, if we can now, Simon. So either to the start of WebMart or if it was before that. But oftentimes going through life, it doesn't always make sense. But looking back, there's this time in every entrepreneur's life when they seem to realize one of two things. That either they had this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or as mostly seems to be the case, they just found they could not work for somebody else anymore.
Mm.
So can you, Simon, tell me what side of the fence you see yourself on, but then also take me back to when you sort of discovered this about yourself?
Well, two things. I mean, I'd always wanted to start a business just because it's one of those things like climbing mountains. I needed to give it a go. And to be frank, I wouldn't have minded whether it succeeded or failed, but I wanted to give it a go. And the kind of nub of it was that the opportunity came about because I saw in 1993, which is prehistoric as far as the digital world, but I saw what was called the NEC digital paperback, and that was what you would call a Kindle now. But that was 23 years ago in Japan, in Kyoto in Japan, and I just blew my mind, and I knew the world was going to be changing quite dramatically, and I was in a very analog world of printing. So I realized I needed to have a swift opportunity to work with this new media, and the company that I was working for at the time, I put it to them, said this was going to be a fantastic opportunity. They decided, no, we're going to stick with the world that we know, which was printing. And I said, okay, well, I need to leave the business. I'll carry on working with you in print, but I want to do other things as well. Plus the fact I had two young children, and I'd done 65,000 business miles in my previous job in the last year. So I just realized that if I was going to do it, now was probably the time while they were young. One was 3 months, one was 3 years old. And if I didn't, I would simply not have a chance to see them. So those two kind of imperatives that I needed to start up WebMart. And WebMart, the name of it, I mean, it sounds beautifully precedent to do with the internet, but at the time it was Web Offset, a type of printing marketplace. So and I just put the two together to make WebMart. And obviously now it's, anything web related pertains to the internet, but it's, and as soon as you've, my beliefs have always been left to center, and as soon as you make enough to look after your family and your friends and your extended family, then you want to give as much back as you possibly can to society and to the people who work with you, alongside you, and that's where the kind of Marxist capitalist bit kind of developed over the first few years of WebMart, and has now been going for 15 years, the redistribution that we do.
Right. So you started as you needed to do it. Like climbing a mountain, you had to do it once, whether it failed or not. And then, which this happens a lot, it seems, with my guests, is that we start because we just, okay, I just cannot work for and follow someone else's dream anymore. But then it sort of evolves into making a change. So let's discuss this Marxist capitalist thing and this redistribution. What can you tell us what this is and how long you've been doing this?
Sure. I mean, if you look in the world, there's a fantastic amount of good things going on. There are also a fantastic amount of things that need to be resolved. And capitalism is a relatively recent construct as we know it now. And it's the best thing that we found for creating value. There's no better way of creating value. So we use capitalism in its conventional sense, using all the KPIs, all the kind of racy disciplines and the accountabilities all the way through the business, et cetera, to create the value. And then we use Marxist principles of redistribution to share out the surplus profit that we make amongst the team. Now, to create surplus profit, you've got to have this concept called enough. And in nature, and obviously humans, despite what we try and think, we are animals and we live in a natural environment. In nature, there is a natural kind of enough. You don't see trees growing forever. You don't see everything having infinite amounts of growth and what have you. There's a life cycle for it. Now, in business, I think there ought to be enough. Now, we worked out that enough for us to be independent, and we've never borrowed a penny. So we've always self-funded, which in the early years is quite tough. You're limited in the amount of development that you can do to the cash flow that you've got. But as you get bigger and as you get stronger, it gives you much more freedom to do it. And you've got because you haven't borrowed money, you've got a much broader kind of perspective and choice that you can make. Because if you borrow money, you generally have quite a lot of constraints with it. And those constraints are the lender's kind of rules of engagement that they put into doing it. If you don't borrow money, you can do an awful lot of things that most people think you can't actually do. We're using capitalist principles. So we use capitalism to create the profits. So 400,000 retained profits, post-tax profits every year. So our balance sheet strengthens every year by £400,000. And then we have between £400,000 and £1 million profit. Half goes to the team, half goes to me as the entrepreneur. Above £1 million profit, 100% of it goes to the team.
Wow.
So as you can imagine, all of it on a microeconomic sense within a business, you can imagine that changes the emphasis. All of the kind of challenges that most CEOs face within the business gets changed. You don't have them. You don't have to command and control. You don't have to point people in the right direction to do the right things. You don't have to look for the kind of waste that you would do in most conventional businesses, because it is their business. All the growth is going to them. And we've made over £1 million profit for the last 3-4 years. And what it is equated to in real time to people is 3 years ago, they got 22% of their base salary as a bonus. 2 years ago, they got 33%. Last year, they get 43.7% of base salary. Well, you can imagine when you've got that, these people are paid well to start with, and they've got incentive schemes on top of this. So this is a group redistribution. Well, then you obviously don't have the kind of challenges of recruitment, retention, alignment of purpose, all of the kind of issues that you get in terms of multiple versions of the truth within an organization. Because we're as open as you can be. Unless something's going to hurt somebody personally, we share it. So things like, obviously there are things that people have that they don't want to be in the public domain, but it's 0.1% of all the information within the organization. Everything else is shared out. So we have management team meetings and all of the notes are shared out the same day or next day with the team. We have live metrics on the boards for how the business is doing, every order booked in, when cash goes in the bank. And these are funky things. These are funky screens. These aren't just kind of boring spreadsheets. These are real-time metrics updated every 2 minutes in a business which feels very different and looks very different. And if anybody wants to go on our website and have a look around, and there's a Vidcast video on it of what it's like, and certainly the screen grabs of each of the rooms. Every room is themed, so it feels different from like an airline room and whatever, because that actually lets people act different in each room. And if you want creative people doing creative things with an aligned business where everybody wins out of it, then you want to attract the very best people, because that's how you take it on to the next level. And this is a way of redistributing the wealth in a fair and equitable way based on the results that we achieve.
Wow. And this is it's so unique, so interesting, and you've now proven out that it can work. But did you have any mentors, advisors, accountants, lawyers, anybody telling you to not do this when you came up with this idea?
Everyone. Everyone. And the only reason is, and it's not that I'm some wonderful sage-like kind of, CEO. I knew human psychology. I mean, all economics is psychology and money. And if you understand the psychology of people and you understand of how you can use the various levers that you have emotional, I mean, we measure three things: the intellectual return we deliver to people, the emotional return, and the financial return. And if you get the emotional and the intellectual right, the financial follows. So most companies just measure one thing, predominantly anyway, which is the money. And that's an outcome of being successful. It's not the reason. And the reason that everybody's disengaged is that most companies are following the money and they ignore the other two. And we've developed our own software to measure how happy we are at work every day. We have a 360 review, everybody, every 6 months. The only one that's made public is mine. The rest are between the line manager and themselves. So that's how I get an accountability. We have lots of different ways and means of onboarding people. So we have rigorous policies to get people on, and psychometrics and 3 interviews and what have you. And then after 3 months, the team decides whether they're a good webmaster tier and we want them on board in any areas of development and anything that they want to show appreciation in. And then after 6 months, which is the 6-month probationary period, they again have to be voted on. So it's a pretty kind of tough environment to get into. But once you're in and you've proven yourself, fantastic place to be. And it takes out an awful lot of the kind of the challenges that you find in everyday life running a purely capitalist business. You know, we are so far away from the legal constraints that you'd have for tax, for personal well-being, et cetera, because we treat people openly and fairly with everything. We don't even have to worry about red tape. We don't have to worry about the legal kind of constraints that we do, because we're way within that naturally. We have two rules in WebMart in terms of you can do anything that you want as long as these two things apply. One, your mum would be proud of you if she knew about it. And just in case your mum's a psychopath, the second one is, would you be proud of it if it's in the public domain? And if you if you say yes to those two things, do it. You cannot go wrong, because everybody actually wants to do the right thing. And if with those two kind of validations, really simple, then you can get ahead and do it. Well, you imagine you take the rule book out of a business and just do it along those lines. You know, then and everybody has a linked destiny to create as much profit as they possibly can for the long term. Then all of a sudden you're liberating people from a whole tranche of different things that you'd usually have to put in as restrictions and barriers and command and control. And it's quite an interesting and revelationary kind of approach, and it's certainly a lot easier for the person who's running it. So we've got great sustainability. We've got X million pounds sitting in the bank, which we can do whatever we want to do with. And we've got a motivated team who generally bring in people to the business when we need them. They will find the right people. We've never had to use headhunters. We've never had to borrow money or deal with any professional advisors, to be honest, because the sad thing about professional advisors is that to be, in inverted commas, a professional, they've had to go through this brainwashing called their professional qualifications. And within there, they are blinkered to a certain way of doing things. So outside of that, and, you know, these people are, I mean, they're very nice people, but they are not lateral thinkers. They have had to be linear thinkers to be able to get those professional qualifications. So that naturally means all of their advice is within a very narrow focal range. And whereas there's a huge amount of choice out there that you could run a business, you don't need to run a business like accountants and lawyers tell you. You know, there's a huge range. I always use the analogy, I live near Oxford, and the 4-minute mile back in 1954 was broken by Sir Roger Bannister. Now, that was seen as an absolute, nobody could do that. And he did it in 1954, still famous, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But within 2 weeks, somebody else had done it and beaten his record. Because psychologically, they popped that bubble that it cannot be done. And all I want, really, for people to look at is the model of WebMart and take whatever they want from it. All you need to know is you can run a business a radically different way and still be successful and still be profitable. And actually have a great time and do all the right things that you want to do in the work. We pay a lot of tax, and I'm proud of that. All of the bonuses go through our income tax system. We have a 166-acre oxygen farm, so we're carbon positive by to the tune of 2,283 people as a business. So we're great for the environment, great for the people that work there, great for the people who work with us, suppliers and customers. And I've got the easiest CEO job in the world.
Right. But only because you've built a business the way you wanted it, and you've built kind of a world around yourself that you wanted to see, which exactly what you said is not just listening to what the experts tell you that you need to do. You just kind of did it the way you wanted to do it, which is excellent. But now, from saying thank you to creating a capitalist Marxist business that is like very, very, very successful, sounds like everything you do is absolutely right, Simon. And we got to just, like, hopefully shine a light on something that maybe you're not.
Oh, God. I mean.
So every expert right now, Simon, talks about the 80-20 rule, yeah. Right? Do 20%, get 80% of the results. You're supposed to do what you're good at, and you're supposed to delegate the rest.
Yeah.
Simon, can you right now tell me something that you are not good at in your business?
Oh, everything. I can't count. I mean, honestly, I got thrown out of university not once but twice because I can't get maths. I really can't. I mean, I can't fill my own expenses in. I don't know if there is a thing called number dyslexia, but I think I really genuinely have got it. So that was a bit of a challenge to start with. So I kept the finance of the business really simple. I mean, like, really simple. I don't have anything clever. I don't have anything difficult in the business. So if I don't understand it, and I've got to keep it, you know, literally like a, you know, £3 calculator can tell me, then we don't do it, which is why the retained profits, sitting there. And we can work out that what we need to do and how we need to do it from our own funds. You know, we can share the money out. The money is shared out in an equitable way based on the base salary of everybody in the business. And, that, you know, it's the same percentage whether you're paid £20,000 or £200,000. It has the same impact. So you keep it helps to simplify things and keep things in a really, I don't know, non-complex way. And simplicity is actually really efficient.
Right.
And if you can keep things as simple as possible, then wow, that's great. And build a trust circle around you. You know, I'm from the north of England and proudly from Barnsley in Yorkshire, and we're renowned for being direct and honest, straightforward, too direct on occasions, can be seen as rude. But by doing that, if you're straight with people and you trust people from day one, then you'll find out whether they are trustworthy very quickly, because they'll either reciprocate, happy days, you're a friend, or they'll try and screw you. In which case, they'll do that quite quickly as well, in which case you know not to trust them again.
Right.
And really kind of simple way of approaching things. So, but yeah, I mean, like on an 80-20, 80% of things that you try fail.
Right.
If it's different, you know, and that's why people are quite risk averse to doing things that have got a high possibility of failure. And that's why if you'll see that in kind of Silicon Valley and stuff, you know, they've got huge amounts of different small teams trying things, because there is no guarantee that whatever you're doing is going to be right. So you've got to test and try lots of things. So I have small teams doing lots of iterations. And I always say with software development that, you know, goodness me, you know what a cul-de-sac looks like, you know, because you go down them, you try them, and you come back out of it. You have to keep trying, you know, dead ends all the time. But eventually you get to the one bit that works, and then you build on that. But if you're trying in a contrarian way things that other people say can't be done, it is quite difficult. But there's quite often things that people think can't be done that actually can be done if you try hard enough. So it's
right. So what about like projects though? So within Webmart, or I, because of this Marxist setup and because of the two part sort of system of will your mom be proud, and then are you okay if it goes into the public space?
Yeah.
But besides that, like a new project, a new direction that Webmart needs to go in, how what is the process you either go through as the CEO, or like, and whether it's a written process or just an internal process, but what's the process that you or your team goes through to decide when a project, especially as you say, like that most of them fail, but how do you know when it's worth your time, energy, and resources to at least try a new project?
Well, you have to try. I mean, you have to try. That's the thing. You have to a quick evaluation of what's the opportunity, and then you test it. You test it with a customer. Typically, you've got some customers who are quite happy, or you test it with a supplier. And you have a collaborative world that we're in now. And if you can say to them, look, there's an opportunity here, you know, like trying a new product service or developing a new partnership with a supplier, then you say, well, can we give this a try? And let's see, it may fail, but as long as we know what failure equals, as in it's not going to kill either of us and it's not going to hurt us, you know, personally or professionally, can we give this a go? And most people actually like to try things as long as you mitigate the downside. You don't put all your, you know, all of the money in one project. You try lots of different versions. And the first time, second time, may not work out as the way you thought it would. It may not work out at all, but you then do the failure analysis. And if you look at a business, most businesses look at, you know, the success of them, the orders that they get, and they don't really spend the amount of time on the failures to analyze those just as carefully. And if you get a 20% conversion rate of things going well, as in orders coming in, that's fantastic. Analyze that, brilliant, all good news. But what about the 80% that don't? If you don't look that way as well, you know, you flip it and look that way, you don't learn from the opportunities that you get from a failure. And failures are equally as powerful as successes, because you're learning all the time from that. So in that case, nothing that you're trying is actually a failure. as long as you harness the learning experiences from that thing that didn't fly, because there are always loads of ways that you can learn from that. And always there's lessons to be learned by looking in a contrarian way to the perceived wisdom of the marketplace that you're in. And that's a huge space that nobody usually is looking at. But you do have to have money that you can throw at it to try.
Right.
And most big companies, or most companies where they borrow money from people, that makes it a lot more difficult. Not impossible, but a lot more difficult than it would be for us. And that's fine.
Exactly. It's good for you. And that I love that, the idea of the failure analysis, because that 80% is totally needs to be analyzed to learn
capture,
from it.
And capture grow and have somebody that's dedicated. If you've got somebody looking at the success, then have somebody looking at the failure. You know, because actually there's a lot of good things in every failure. And, there's many, many different case studies of companies that failed first time and then tried it, flipped it and did it second time, pivots this way and that way. And you can do that on within your business for initiatives that you've got, and you can try things. And there are many different flavors of way you can present it to market and what have you, some of which will be more successful than others, but all of them you'll learn from.
Right. I love it. All right, Simon, this has been a lot of fun. I want to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could. It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, as sort of dreamers, I find that we're often projecting our successes always into the future. So in 1 month when you hit that revenue metric, or in 6 months when you get to distribute more earnings to your team, or in 1 year when you get to stand on that stage, that's when you'll see yourself as successful. Except right before you hit that goal, you're going to set 5 or 10 bigger ones into the future.
Yeah.
And I agree, we have to set big goals into the future always, but like the horizon, as you walk towards it, it always gets further away. And so from the outside, we look really successful, but from our own vision, we always think that it's coming. It's coming. So you've done a lot of stuff. You've spent 20 years building a brilliant business. You've built it exactly how you want with the distribution of power and earnings through it. It's amazing. And there's been highs and lows and wins and losses. But I would love it right now, Simon, if you could stop, turn around and look behind you at the whole journey. And tell me how you feel about it until today.
I've loved it. I've combined everything that I want to do with running the business. So I climb mountains. I have one stupid thing I do every year, which is for me. I mean, I did the Marathon des Sables last year, which it's not very very big in America, but it's the toughest foot race in the world, where you do 7 marathons across the desert in 7 days in self-supported in the Sahara, and you're carrying all your own food and your cooking gear and all this kind of stuff. So I can combine running the business with doing this, and for me, doing something like that, I put myself physically and mentally in a place that nobody else can put me. So anything that goes on in the workplace is a doddle compared with what I put myself through. So I've combined doing things like motorcycling that I love doing, like seeing the family, like traveling to places that I wouldn't otherwise be able to do, with building a business and giving people the best possible life I could when they work with Webmart. Outside of that, I can help them. You know, we have lots of things that I do. I always think that rather like in the medieval days over in the UK, you used to have this tithe, or the 10% of your work or your output, your agricultural output, used to go to the church. I think I give about 10% of my time to helping people who need help. And it can be in many different ways. Maybe starting a business. It may be, you know, talking to kids at school. It may be helping, the kind of homeless areas. And our charity now is given over £500,000 over those 20 years to charity as a byproduct of what we do. So I always look at every day. I don't, to be honest, yes, you're malcontent. As an entrepreneur, you don't sit there and think, oh yeah, I made this, fantastic. It's just not in your psyche. You're always pushing, you're always challenging, you're always looking for new things. But you've got to enjoy every day, because believe me, in life, getting to the destination ain't where you want to be, because you're dead. So unless you enjoy the journey, unless you appreciate and give yourself time to sit back and really think and just smell the changing of the seasons and give yourself space. Every entrepreneur I know says, I haven't got time to do this, that, and the other. Well, I do what I call is a DIY MBA, which is I book in half a day of space thinking time every week in my diary, Tuesday morning, every week, all the way through. And that gives me half a day of personal development that I can do every year. I can then research things, find out all sorts of weird combinations and find out things like at the moment I'm studying artificial intelligence and neural networks and machine learning and all of that kind of stuff so that I can future-proof my business myself for what's going to come up. So, you know, you can combine, you can be what you want to be if you set your stall up, but for heaven's sake, enjoy every day. Won't feel like it some days, but you can look back and that challenge, that mental toughness that you had to go through to get it, you can draw an awful lot of solace from that and you'll draw a lot of strength from it. So please, please, please. I mean, it's hard work. Yes, of course it's hard work, but that's what we signed up for. That's what we want to do. That's what we're good at. Hard work, thinking creatively, but sit back, give yourself time to sit back and appreciate it. So important.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, Simon.
No problem.
So webmartuk.com is the website and the business. Make sure to check that out. And also, Simon, you did fairly recently a Google talk for Inspire London.
Yeah.
And it's on YouTube. It's an excellent, excellent talk. I'll link to both of those in the show notes on hacktheentrepreneur.com. So when you get a chance, stop by there and check out Simon's talk over at Inspire London. Once again, Simon, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for taking the time today. And please just keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
I'll try. Thank you very much. Cheers, John. Take care, mate.
Simon, that was a fun conversation. Of 200 and something, 30 something interviews I've now done, I've yet to talk about Marxist capitalism. Actually, I didn't even know it existed. I love your approach to life and business. Literally do what you want, how you want to do it, make it work, create a life and a business that you're happy with and that you can live and sleep at night with. I love that. Things don't have to be done the way we think that they need to be done. They could be done how you want to do them. If you're willing to be, shall I say, stubborn enough to just do it. That was a fun conversation, Simon. And the conversation was even more fun to go back. So I did. And then I went back through it again. And then I went back through it again. And then I went back through it again. The last time I went through it, Simon said something that I hadn't noticed originally. But when I was listening to it this time, it was so clear the way he said it and what he said. It was that one thing that just stood out to me so clearly. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
We measure three things. The intellectual return we deliver to people, the emotional return, and the financial return. And if you get the emotional and intellectual right, the financial follows. So most companies just measure one thing, predominantly anyway, which is the money. And that's an outcome of being successful. It's not the reason. And the reason that everybody's disengaged is that most companies are following the money and they ignore the other two.
And that's the hack. Simon, Simon, Simon. The emotional, the intellectual, and the financial. Most companies, you're absolutely right. Most of us as human beings focus on the emotional. We think that the money is what drives the business. And the money, as you just said so, so very well, the money is simply an outcome of being successful. It is not the reason. The money is an outcome of being successful. The money is not the reason you are successful. Wow. So if you want to engage your team, If you want to engage people around you, co-founders, anyone to get behind you, your ideas, or your businesses, pay attention to their emotional and their intellectual needs. What do they need to feel a part of it? What do they need to want to push forward? What do they need intellectually to be stimulated and not disengaged and uninterested in what it is you are trying to accomplish? It's not about the money. The money is just the outcome if you hit the emotional and intellectual needs of your team, of your customers, of your suppliers, of everybody around your business. If you hit their emotional and their intellectual needs properly, the financial return will come. Damn, Simon. That was good. All right. That was a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Simon, for joining me. I really, truly, truly enjoyed that. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. Head on down there. Get onto the email list. Every Sunday, I'm writing my best work. It's coming straight to your inbox. And as you know, publishing is off right now because I am in Europe with my family and with my friends. Going to a conference, hanging out in the city, seeing some art galleries. And I'll still be writing to you every Sunday. Don't you worry. But get on the email list. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the place. I'd love to have you there. All right. It's been an absolute blast. I thank you so much for joining me. As always, I absolutely, absolutely, absolutely appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.